All.com.
The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
The Hornet's Nest. I'm Nick Gardner. I'm your host today. I'm here with a bachelor's dream come true. I'm stuck in a room about 10 by 12 with two good-looking chicks. I got Katie Gorman and Leslie Sawyer here. We're going to talk about Moms for Liberty, but first we've got a little bit of unpacking to do. One thing I like to tell you is how Kevin Cry is saving the county money. Not just Kevin Cry, Chris Kellstrom, and Patrick Jones. The three of them are saving us a ton of money. And here is the one thing they're going to. This is R4 on the meeting Tuesday. Discuss the process for determining the property tax exemption level if the cost of assessing properties and collecting taxes, assessments, and subventions exceeds the total taxes, special assessments, and applicable subventions on the property. What that means is the county has been spending a quarter to collect a dime. When it comes to property taxes on RVs, business property, say somebody owns a window cleaning business and sells it, they're buying Blue Sky, a ladder, and a squeegee, and the county has been spending money to collect property taxes on the ladder and the squeegee. So it was set about 20 years ago at $500. The threshold now, according to Kevin, what he believes should be between $3,000 and $4,000. So why would you spend $3,000 or $4,000 right now to collect $500? Saving the county money. So, okay, we're going to go off right now about the meeting getting shut down at the supervisors' meeting this last Tuesday. I think it was the 23rd. And we're going to play a clip number one, pretty quick here. And this is the people that shut down the meeting. And what you're going to realize is that it's the recallers. And in particular, it's Christian Gardner. This is the second time he has shut down a meeting. It was prolonged because Jenny decided to sit on the floor as a protest. And so pay attention to this. Pay attention to the people yelling in the background. It's 100% recallers. Could we go with clip number one?
In that if you're going to make a selection, you're going to have to support the commission. We don't pick Shasta County planning commissioners that don't think the planning commission should even exist. We don't do that. And we're not going to do it this time. So I'll call. No, you may not. So we're going to call for a roll call vote. Stephanie, can we start with Supervisor?
I'm in queue, so thank you. I'd like to speak, please.
All right, Supervisor Garmin.
Thank you. It's obvious you all will never allow me to pick my appointee for this commission. You guys want to pick this for me? That's not how the spirit of appointees work. We appoint people to different commissions in the county. This is disgusting, disgraceful, and it's a shame in the county that you guys will not allow me to pick my appointee. I support as your appointee, and I do not agree with him any less than you don't agree with Mr. Noyen. But it was your appointee, sir, just like it was with Supervisor Christ. You guys both, yep, we'll vote for your person. Well, obviously, you guys don't have any interest in that. You guys want to run this as a dictatorship, you should be flat out ashamed. Supervisor Rickert?
Yes, and I have to kind of echo the comments by Supervisor Garmin. Is we represent everyone in Shasta County. Everyone's political views are important. And I think by having a diverse commission only makes it representative of the people of Shasta County. In my district alone, about half of my constituents, a little over half, are registered Republicans. About a third or so are registered Democrats, and about another third are NPP. Everyone is entitled to a voice. That's what makes America great. And I think that this is another example of one personal political agenda being foisted on the rest of the citizens of Shasta County, and it has to stop. It absolutely has to stop.
Thank you, Supervisor. So, again, I can't be more clear. This has nothing to do with the political affiliations. This has everything to do with quiet. Christian, I'm going to ask you to leave. I'm going to ask you to leave the room.
No, thank you.
Okay, so there you have it. You've got Christian Gardner out there yelling, "Hail, dictator." You've got those people clapping. That's all the recallers. And you've got Tim and Mary crying because they don't get their pick. Well, I have personally witnessed Nathan Pinckney and Benjamin Nguyen get up there and just rip on Patrick Jones time after time after time, and now they're begging him for their vote. Well, paybacks are a son of a gun, aren't they?
Well, and to add to that, Christian had been warned multiple times that meeting. And when they came back and got the meeting going again after everything had been cleaned up, Patrick said, "Okay, sorry for the interruption." And Christian yelled, "It was your fault." Like it was, they want the narrative to be, "Oh, look, Patrick can't handle a meeting again. That's why it got shut down." Christian had been warned multiple times throughout that meeting about his behavior. He was going to shut it down either way. And Benjamin had already been given 3 minutes to speak, and he was insisting on speaking, which is why everybody was acting up. So both of them shut it down on purpose. Their actions are their actions only, and Patrick Jones has zero blame for that.
Absolutely. And you know what really caught my eye is Mary Rickert. Over half of my constituents are Republicans. A third are Democrats. And another third, they're PP, NPP, no party preference. Well, Mary, that's 116, 117% rounded off. You must have gone to Charlie Can't Count's school on math. Wake up, little sister. You know, you people that are represented by Mary Rickert, you need to take a hard look at her record. She was Leonard Modi's puppet until he got recalled, and now she thinks she's the elder statesman on the council, and it isn't working out.
Well, and go back and listen to the archives from this week's meeting if you are in Mary's district, because they're talking about the TOT tax and wanting to use that for tourism, which is what it's intended to do. And she went off about how there is so much to do in the North State, and especially in the Intermountain area, and we don't need more tourism. Listen to it. Listen to it for yourself. Don't take my word for it. But she has a community that has filled with empty buildings and businesses that are really struggling, and she thinks there's enough going on in the North State because she's busy.
Okay, so we're going to move on now. We're going to talk about the park fire. And the guy that started the park fire, I think he's 42. His last name's Stout. He's been, he was arrested for domestic violence and then for robbery in Orrville and did some time for that. And now he started this fire. He started his mommy's car on fire and pushed it over a ravine, and they've got him arrested now. So I'm wondering what they're going to do with that. And I wanted to bring to your attention our Sheriff Mike Johnson. And I like Mike. Mike's just fine, but I don't agree with his. And I don't agree with Kevin's stance on a jail and what incarceration is. So can we play that clip with Sheriff Johnson, please?
So what we need to figure out now is the accountability portion for that. Either they go into a program or they get incarcerated if they don't want to help themselves and go with the program. So incarceration can mean different things. It doesn't necessarily have to be locked in the jail because I just don't have the room to do that. So that means
right.
I need to come up with more alternative custody type programs and start having them be sentenced so they're not sentenced and have to go to jail. They're sentenced to have to give back to the community in some way, whether that's community cleanup, whether that's fire camp program, whether that's learning a trade, whatever it is. And that's a bit heavy lift, but it seems like we as a community start need to looking at some of those options too, because the jail is the jail. It is what it is right now, and
yeah.
We don't have the money to expand it. We finally have come to that conclusion until we can figure something else out. So alternative custody programs, I think, is the way that we're going to have to look, because they have to be held accountable. You just can't have laws on the books that you just don't enforce or write tickets for or make arrests.
So what kind of incarceration would you prefer for Stout, who started this fire that's burned over 300,000 acres? Maybe we'll teach him a trade.
Well, but not only that, if you look at the story that was put out on him, not only was it domestic violence, but it was lewd and lascivious acts against a minor under the age of 14.
That's the one I missed, yes.
Yeah.
And it was a robbery, I think, in Oroville, an armed robbery. Anyway, the guy's a rotten, no-good polecat coyote. If he's not a candidate for retroactive abortion, I think he ought to be in jail and not let back out. I firmly believe retroactive abortion for arsonists is called for, along with people that make methamphetamine, along with people that sell large amounts of methamphetamine. There's a lot of candidates out there that need to be put to sleep, in my opinion. Uh-oh, we got a light blinking. What's the light blinking for? Oh, he's telling me to watch my profanity or something. Anyway.
No, that's what we use for taking a break.
Oh, it's not break time already. We'll take a break at 8:30.
So, oh, okay, copy that.
So, okay, let's move on to Big League Dreams. That's my take on the park fire. You know, we need to make these people accountable. They're not afraid of anything. And it's not just arsonists. It's from top to bottom. And a jail is what will do it. I would like to see our supervisors and our sheriff promote another 600 beds. I don't want to see them build a 600-bed wheel and then shut the other one down. We need an additional 600 beds, in my opinion. So let's move on to Big League Dreams. Big League Dreams shut down. Well, you know, here's the deal. Big League Dreams was built with a $20 million grant from the state of California. They gave it to the city of Redding. The city of Redding built this sports park, and they own it. They leased it out on a 32-year lease to Big League Dreams from Chino Hills. The first 4 years of that lease was rent-free because, as Mark Cibula, who was on the council at the time, explained to me, all the meals and the motel rooms, the TOT tax, that is going to be their portion of the rent. And Big League Dreams, after 4 years, was going to pay 6% of their gross as rent. That means the $3 that you paid in to get into the sports park that you own would be 18 cents. That's what the city would get. And this is the same thing they're going to pull down here at the Redding Civic Auditorium. You watch. They're going to take our property. They're going to give it to a private entity. They're going to own it, and you're going to have to pay to get into it. So that's the take on Big League Dreams. So 2 years ago, Big League Dreams sold their contract to another outfit. I don't know what the name of it is. It looked to me like it was another entity created by Big League Dreams to get them out of liability because they didn't keep up with the upkeep on our park. And our park's in horrible shape. The turfs, they've been complaining about the turf for 15 years now, and it's just gotten worse. And so we're going to be stuck with that bill. But then again, on the bright side of things, Redding Electric Utility will loan us the money, and we won't have to pay it back. So, the fun just keeps getting better and better and better. There's a special meeting tomorrow night at the City Council Chambers at 5:15. You should go there and voice your opinion and tell this board or this city council, that maybe the city should not be in public-private partnerships, because the only ones that I see work are these three-story buildings downtown where they're a public-private partnership, and the public gives them some money, some grant money for affordable housing, and the private entity owns it. That seems to work out real good for the private entity. You know, Block 7's a wonderful example of that. Barry Tippin gave him two prime blocks in downtown Reading to K2 and the McConnell Foundation, and they call it a public-private partnership. But Reading doesn't own any part of it. They don't get any benefits of it. We need to stop that and put our government into the business of why we have government. That's to provide safety and infrastructure and get out of trying to be in business because, you know, you take people like Mike Warren. He's never been in business, but he's real good at starting businesses that don't work out. You've got Big League Dreams, and then you've got Stillwater Business Park. So that's the take on that. And let me remind you that the supervisors' meeting Tuesday night is at 5:30. So it promises to be interesting. The recallers are going to be there. They're going to be whining because the media's got to go in their special room. And that's just to protect them. I can see where the supervisors' meeting isn't getting has the potential to get out of hand and be dangerous. You take a look at Christian Gardner and Big D, you know. Some of them are just way out there in left field, and you don't know what they're going to drag in there to be offensive. Maybe weapons. Who knows? But anyway, let's move on to what we were going to talk about. That's Moms for Liberty. And I've got Leslie, and I've got Katie here. And I think the first thing that you need to explain is what Moms for Liberty is, because I see it getting a dirty taste in people's mouth because of the news media, the same way they did the Tea Party. The Tea Party was wonderful. The media ran it into the ground, and all of a sudden we're a bunch of polecat coyote skunks.
Right.
And so tell us why.
Well, and let me start by saying Katie and I will not be at Tuesday night's night meeting because us, with a bunch of other Moms for Liberty members, are going to Reno to meet our future vice president, J.D. Vance.
Oh, lucky
you! So we're going to go be doing that. But the media, of course, why would they want to make and label superheroes superheroes? You've got a bunch of moms standing up and fighting for their kids. You can't sell a narrative that divides our county or our country. I'm so used to saying dividing our county because we work small. But you can't sell a narrative that divides our country if you're telling the truth. And the truth is COVID exposed where our kids are being failed, and COVID exposed how across the nation our test scores are sitting around 35%. And if we run with that narrative, people start asking questions about the Department of Education, and they start asking questions about what's going on in their local school boards, and they don't want that because we're already making too much noise. As far as local media goes, I told Mike Mangus I'll sit down with him anytime, and we'll give him the real scoop on it. But other than that, with local media, we have no interest in sitting down with a trash rag that's going to change our story anyway. And anything that local media, Shasta Scout, the trash rag cafe, whatever, we have no interest in talking to them about our side of the story because they're going to write what they want anyway.
Oh, yes, and there are people that comment on there. They're so proud of their comments, 80% of them won't even use their own name. But, you know, the thing is, I became a single dad, Logan's 35 now, I guess 30 years ago, you know, and I was ignorant to what's going on in our schools. You know, he was 5 years old. He hadn't had his inoculations. I took him down so he could go to school. He was going to public school. Everything was hunky-dory. And later, you know, 10 years later, I'm going, hey, you know, he didn't get much of an education.
Right.
When things are going good, we're not paying attention, and they took advantage of us at that time. Do you got anything to say about that, Katie?
Yeah, that's actually kind of why Moms for Liberty was started. It was started by two moms that got an inside look at what's going on in our schools as school board members in Florida. And they were in two separate counties, and they bonded over having to go up against their own party. And, by the way, one of them registered Democrat. And realizing that there was a lot of pressures on the school board to cater to the school employees, the teachers' unions. There was not a lot of support for parents and what the parents wanted. And then COVID exposed everything that was going on. A lot more parents were awake to what was going on, and they were pushing back. They wanted their kids in school. They wanted the masks off of them, and they did not want an injection that they didn't see that they needed.
You know what else they wanted? They wanted an education for their kids.
Exactly. And that was the biggest thing that brought that brought them to the table was the test scores. But then they found that there was a lot of people that were showing up and wanting to be part of it because of, you know, looking into all of the, you know, people saying basically they know best than you do on how to raise your child.
And they're old people to boot.
Yeah, and there was a giant amount of frustration, so they decided to create Moms for Liberty, and it was supposed to be just within their individual counties, but it exploded to now include almost every single state. And the way that we work, we are grassroots, so we don't answer to a national brand at all. We have our own chapter within Shasta County, and we run it how we see fit. We do represent Moms for Liberty, and when we wear the shirt, we do make sure that we are upholding certain values. And the biggest thing is that we're joyful warriors. We fight like hell with a smile on our face because our children are watching. Our biggest tenet that we are fighting for, every single thing that we do is through the lens of parental rights, and that is what we are looking at. We want the parents the center of the child's life, and we want the 14th Amendment upheld within that. And so we're fighting all levels of government on this aspect.
Do you know what else besides parental rights? We need taxpayers' rights. We're not paying taxes for the education they're shoving down our throats.
Right. And that's why you do not have to be a mom to be involved with Moms for Liberty. You can be a dad. You can be a grandma. You can be a grandpa. Or you can just be a taxpayer who says, I'm paying property taxes. I'm paying taxes to go toward these schools. And I'm seeing the future of our country that's being piped out, and it's not wholesome, and I want to see it be better. And you, as just a concerned citizen who pays taxes, can be involved.
And how many times have you heard people say all the time, well, that person doesn't have a child in the district? That is a way to cool our older generation who have ideals and principles and understand the Constitution and are ready to stand
well,
up.
Well, but I will say, we use that line as well, because they will bus in people from out of district, and they will have people.
I'm talking about school board, to be
oh,
on
right,
school board.
Right.
But yeah.
Yeah. So, but at meetings when people show up, that is a famous, you know, they don't even have kids in this district, but you cannot have kids in the district and still be involved and still want to speak up because you live and you're a taxpayer in that district. You are still a stakeholder. Your taxes still pay those board, or not those board members, the school, which those board members are voted in by you. And that is a huge thing, and Katie and I keep harping on it. Right now is the filing period. If you want to be involved, even if you don't want to join Moms for Liberty, think about stepping up as a board member, because there are 75 open seats in Shasta County for you to make a difference.
How do you find out what district you're in if you were maybe wanting to be a board member? Where could you find out when they're having a meeting and go look at it and see what's going on? I know I went to a SCOE meeting. I've gone to mm-hmm. two of them. And I looked at these old people up there, and I'm going, these people don't have kids in there. And I listened to them, and, boy, it doesn't seem like their interest is what's best for the kids.
Some of the maps in the areas are hard to navigate, and it's hard to know which one you are. The easiest way I found to explain to people to find out, if you go put your house in Zillow, your address in Zillow, and you scroll down, it tells you what school districts that your kids would go to if you bought that house. So that's the easiest way. You go to Zillow, it'll tell you what school district you're part of. That's the school district you would run in. SCOE also has open positions, and they just have two districts. So there's one which is basically the very center of town, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the other one which is everything else. And
both have
openings.
What is SCOE's role? What are they in charge of?
Oh, funny story.
Yeah, so if you ask them, they are their own little tiny school district that has, you know, maybe under 50 kids, and that they basically just resource our kids that have maybe need credit recovery or different things like that. And then they also have something to do with preschools and after-school care. But in reality, they take on an insane amount of grant money. And what this grant money does is it gets funneled into our school districts with strings attached. And it turns the heads of our other school districts in line with the gigantic agenda that includes things like DEI, critical race theory, the gender stuff, a lot of things. Social-emotional learning is another one that people really need to watch out for, because it's another way of indoctrinating children in the left ideologies. And so all of these things continue to stack up onto our school districts, and then you end up with basically SCOE with their arm of power and money making all of the other school districts fall in line with their programs. And the latest version of this is, well, it's several different grants, but I put it under one umbrella called community schools. It is now starting to do healthcare at school. And, you know, I think a lot of us and a lot of your listeners are against universal healthcare. Well, universal healthcare is being introduced into your child's school. Dental appointments, psychological appointments, all of those things will now start taking place at school. And this
hold
is...
Hold it. Let's hold it there. I hate to interrupt you, but we've got to go to a break.
Yeah.
And I've got a really good Kamala commercial coming out of break, so...
Woohoo!
Break time, right? No, I guess we're not.
I'm Tracy Edwards, CEO of the Redding Rancheria. Giving back to our local community is a tradition that is firmly rooted in our history.
We'd like to thank the Redding Rancheria for all their community support, including the bike shop. They do so much for our community, and we're beyond grateful.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Rancheria. You are the ones we can always count on to help us out in tough times. They're the people that have always been there for us, much more so than anyone else in our community. Thank you from the bottom of our hearts.
Redding Rancheria. Proud to play our part.
Unleash the heat and let the humps turn every moment into a sizzling spectacle. Experience the allure of the hottest male performers heating up the event center at Wind River Resort and Casino on Friday and Saturday, August 23rd and 24th. Get up close and personal with these male dancers as they work their way from the stage and through the crowd. Tickets for this steamy event are just $20 plus fees and include $10 free slot play. For tickets or complete details, visit windriver.com or call 1-800-280-UWIN. Find your moment at Wind River Resort Sorting Casino.
For over 50 years, House of Realty has provided experienced and effective advice to its real estate clients. Experts in residential, commercial, and investment property, we have the knowledge and tools to assist you with all of your real estate needs. Family owned and operated since 1965, we have been an active part of the Shasta County community for generations. Please call House of Realty today at 241-8300. A reputation for excellence since 1965.
I'm Tracy Edwards, CEO of the Redding Rancheria. Giving back to our local community is a tradition that is firmly rooted in our history.
Mimi Mosley here from Mosley Family Sellers. We'd just like to thank Redding Rancheria for their generous gift to us. It was so helpful and helped to keep us alive.
Hi, I'm Shelby Mahara with Squishy Doodle Face Painting, and I just wanted to say a huge thank you to Redding Rancheria for all of their support. They always help the community and always help to take care of us when they can.
Redding Rancheria, proud to play our part.
Much guys, appreciate y'all.
Because through the passage of time.
Another trick is trying to sound black. I pretend to celebrate Kwanzaa, and in my speeches, I always do my best Barack Obama impression.
So hear me when I say, I know Donald Trump's type.
And okay, look, maybe my work addressing the root causes of the border crisis were catastrophic, but my knowledge of international politics is truly shocking.
The United States shares a very important relationship, which is an alliance with the Republic of North Korea. It is an alliance that is strong and enduring.
And just remember, when voting this November, it is important to see what can be unburdened by what has been. And by what has been, I mean Joe Biden. Do you think the country went to sh** over the past 4 years? You ain't seen nothing yet.
Oh, I wish I could mimic that laugh. You know, I predicted 6 months ago that Michelle Obama would be our next president. Just so they could tell us that they can do anything they want and there's nothing you can do about it. But they found somebody better with Kamala. She's got like zero qualifications. So we're going to go back to Katie Gorman. She was explaining SCOE to us and how they are getting all the money and how they're using it, the grants and everything. One thing I want to point out before you get to that is I've got a friend that's in the construction business, and he pointed out some big buildings that SCOE has bought, and they've divvied it up into little tiny cubicles for employees. And what for? What do they need all these employees for?
Yeah,
why are they wasting our money?
How many students are they servicing out of these big buildings?
There's no students being serviced out of these buildings. And this is crazy because my husband's been on this board for a good while now. And we still are yet to totally uncover what they do. A good example, just to give everybody, is that they have this big, gorgeous building, top of Hilltop. There is a lot of very high-paying people that work in that building, making between $150,000 and $200,000. There is a couple of preschool teachers making, you know, dirt, and they're the ones that actually service the kids. We've had scenarios where these people getting paid all this money are having to contract out to a speech therapist in the Gateway District to come and assess these kids. The people sitting in that building working there have the ability to assess a child on a speech IEP. So none of it makes sense. It all is
right.
Needs to be looked into. I mean, we need like a giant forensic audit, but that probably is a whole show in and of itself because we have so much to cover today. But this is why school boards are important. We need oversight. We need people that are willing to say no to these grants and to stop the train going down to nowhere, and it's for our children. And the biggest thing that all of these programs are doing, and Leslie's going to take it from here, is that it's taking away from the education what is the most important part of the day. And I should also tell you that I'm a public school teacher, and it's hard to say it out loud, but I put my resignation in this summer because I can no longer be part of this system that continues to chip away at the child's school day where they're no longer learning. And our standards are just getting eroded by, and it's all part of this grant situation. Because schools have the autonomy to do what they want to do, but they're losing that autonomy every single time they take on a grant, and then they have what's called terms and conditions. But anyway, back
Let
to you.
Let me ask you something before Leslie gets started. How many school districts are in Shasta County?
I'm going to say
23.
It's
23 and 25.
25, yeah.
Why do we need so many school districts? Each one's got a superintendent, principal, high-paying people. How many could we get by with?
Whoa, 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 whoa.
Whoa, 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 whoa.
All right.
Nick,
you need more, not less, in this situation. So your individual districts is a good thing because that's what is local control, right? What SCOE wants to see and what the state wants to see is one district to rule them all. In that case, you would have a situation like the SCOE board where you've got one Arthur Gorman and you've got a bunch of other people who either want to rubber stamp for the state or want to be there to serve their own interests.
I'm corrected. Thank you.
Yes. So you want multiple districts, and you do not want to minimize any of them.
And this is why Shasta County, because of our 25 school districts, has been able to do so much against the state, is because our elected officials are extremely close to us. We see them at the grocery store. We interact with them. We can go into these school board meetings, and we can have these conversations with them. When you start removing our government from us, then we're going to be more disenfranchised, which is obviously something California voters know a lot about because our representatives are so watered down.
Right.
But back to our
child success and
our scores, our test scores are just atrocious, and California keeps on, running it down.
So I actually was in a SCOE meeting, and this is kind of, I knew this was happening all over the state. I knew this was happening all over the country. But I was in a SCOE meeting, and there was one of the charter schools that answers to the board that was there presenting, and they're talking about their test scores. And the number that was thrown out was 40%, 46%, and they were saying it like it was something to brag about and report on. We have increased in our scores sitting around 46%, and I was like, what the heck, Batman? Do we realize 46% is an F, right? Like, and I knew that this was happening. I have friends fighting in New Jersey for Moms for Liberty. We have friends in New York. And so I knew that they're battling, like, in the 30s. And so we're looking at it, and across the country, test scores are sitting around 35%. Most students in the United States of America cannot read above a third grade reading level. Third grade. Once you get past that point, they pull out all the interventions. They're like, okay, you're a lost cause. Good luck from here. And with No Child Left Behind, we just push them through the system without making them equipped. And then along comes COVID, which further reverses and further sets back kids who are already struggling. Then we take and we have things and programs that are implemented that make safe spaces for kids who are acting out. Well, the kids are acting out because they're behind and they're, you know, wanting to take attention off of the fact that they're not, you know, on track with their other kids. So then the solution is pull that kid out of the room so that they're not creating a disruption. Put them in a room with a bunch of toys and fidgets and, you know, give them a happy space to bounce and be annoying there, but remove them out of the classroom. Well, you remove them out of the classroom, they're now falling even further behind, and then therefore their behavior is going to get worse, not better, right? So it's this endless spiral of just a mess. But it's funny because it takes things and sometimes a little bit of false information to get people to, like, think and look and ask questions. Well, on the Dr. Phil show, which it was a rerun from a year or two before, and it ended up being a little bit of false information, but it got people questioning and asking questions. They had a public grading scale that was proposed in California, which took grades. And an A was now 84% to 100%, a B 64% to 84%, a C 44% to 64%, a D 24% to 44%, and an F was 0 to 24%. Well, the reason that I say it's false information was that was a scale that had been proposed to one school district, and they were thinking, they were voting. It doesn't say whether or not that passed. But what was interesting about this and why this visualization of it came about is that is what this No Child Left Behind thing is. That is what the Department of Education is pushing with what they're doing with all of our curriculums and testings and everything else, is they're realizing our kids are not on par. Our kids are not getting there. They still don't want to focus on ABCs and 1-2-3s. Instead, they want to focus on the LGBTs and all the other stuff. And they want to push these narratives, and they want to push all this indoctrination and social issues on your kids. And they don't want to focus on reading, writing, math, science, the things that are actual, factual, and will get our kids' test scores up. How about we focus on those areas? We leave out all the extra junk until our kids are caught up. And then if you want to start introducing whatever you want to introduce, let's do that. But let's make sure our kids can read, our kids can write. And then when we're reintroducing things, let's bring back things like home ec and the arts and other things that are beneficial to our kids. Let's teach them to balance a checkbook.
You know, I read someplace not a long time ago that 38% of the kids that enter high school don't graduate.
Well, they've,
that's
they've,
in California.
Well, but they've changed the requirements for graduation, and so the graduation rates are going up, and they're celebrating that. But the graduation, the diploma doesn't mean the same thing.
Oh, heck no. It's like an eighth grade diploma when I was in school. You know, Rush Limbaugh touched on it. I think he was talking about Chicago. There was a high school that passed a rule that if you hadn't graduated by the time you were 23, you weren't welcome back. Let that sink in.
Right?
Yes.
In California, that's only for students that have medical issues that get to continue to go to school.
So Leslie's absolutely right. This kind of
federal takeover of our education system really did happen, start under the Bush administration, under No Child Left Behind. Now we're under several rewrites of that, and we're moving in even to a new era, which you'll hear teachers say exact opposite of what Leslie's saying, and this is kind of a talking point that you just, it's just inside their bones at this point, which is that kids cannot learn unless their social and emotional needs are met first. So their focus is not on education in the sense that we think of it. Now, part of this, and I will give this to a lot of teachers, part of this is because we are getting a group of children that, the best word for it, they are dysregulated. They are mm-hmm. off the charts. They come to school after being all the time online, on iPads, and they don't have their addiction with them. There's so many elements to it that they come to school, and I get these five-year-olds, and they are out of their mind. Mm-hmm. They don't know how to regulate their own emotions. They don't have a lot of abilities to speak, so they act out similar to two-year-olds do. So these teachers are up against a lot. So it's very easy to see when you see this monstrosity in front of you to say, I need help. You look for resources. And, of course, the government's there to help with a wonderful program called mm-hmm. Social Emotional Learning. And so you spend all your time trying to do that. Well, it's making it worse. There's an amazing book out there. It's called Bad Therapy. It's from Abigail Schreier. I encourage everybody to read it because it can help you understand what the social emotional learning is doing to our children and how it is creating more and more problems. But
well, it seems to me a lot of these problems start at home, and the school districts have stuck their nose in on what's going on at home. But one thing I noticed with my little boy when he was in fourth and fifth grade is you would have a group of students that were high achievers, mm-hmm. and you would have the medium ones that were probably going to be carpenters and plumbers and window washers, and then you had the ones that didn't have anybody at home to teach them any manners or any morals or anything, and they were going to probably be criminals. And they wanted to put these in with the high achievers so they don't feel left out. And what they did is they brought the educational level down because the teachers had to cater to them. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, and that's absolutely the focus. Back in the No Child Left Behind era, schools were incentivized to bring a child that was what we used to call far below basic, like, sure. you know, what the average would be. So
normal
you got,
people would
you
call
got,
them dumb.
You got giant accolades as right. schools and even, like, maybe windfalls of money or different things like that to bring a child from the lower academics all the way up maybe to middle. So you would get giant points for showing growth in a child that is a high achiever would get you a whole lot of nothing. So the right. focus just turned completely on that.
It was all about money.
Right. And it always has been. And you know what? Katie was right. You know, No Child Left Behind kind of came in during the Bush administration, but I don't think we're giving enough credit to the Clintons because Hillary Clinton coined a term, and I hate that she's the one that coined it, because now when I say it, meaning what it should mean, she gets all the credit. But the it takes a village to raise your children was a Hillary Clinton thing. And what they mean by that is it takes a village that we're creating through governmental programs to raise your child. You're not necessary. And what we are seeing now is that being played out through legislation and through legal actions that they're taking to remove and break up the family unit and take away parental rights. Are we heading into another break?
No, we're no break,
okay.
Annie.
So, and where that's most prominent is what's happening in California right now. What's happening nationally with Title IX, but what's happening in California right now with AB 1955 is they want to remove the parents completely from the situation, and they want to have all structure and control with what goes on. They want to be that safe person for your child so that the government can offer them all the programs that they need, and we're raising an entire generation dependent on governmental programs. This doesn't sound like socialism or Marxism or anything, right? doesn't sound like we're ushering in a new Nazi era or anything where you're completely and fully dependent on the government. But, I mean, that's what's happening.
You know, I raised a little boy by myself, and my biggest problem raising him by myself was other people sticking their nose in my business. You know, it's morals. It's your morals, your responsibility to raise your kids, and the school needs to get their nose out of what's going on at home and concentrate on the three R's.
Right. And, you know, Katie touched on that. You have kids that come in after spending an entire summer on an iPad or an Xbox or whatever, and they don't know how to interact with other kids. And social learning in that aspect needs to be taught. Kids need to be taught social skills.
Sure.
Because they are not getting it at home in some cases. But just like how there is one bad cop that might do something should not label the entire police force that keeps us safe and works hard for our community bad, you cannot take one parent who is neglectful of their child and label every other parent who wants what's best for their child a danger and unsafe. And that's what's happening, and that's what the narrative is. And so then they're using that as an opportunity to, hey, we need to be the ones in charge of teaching your kids how to socially interact with each other. And it starts with, and even in Shasta County, I know, because when I worked in the schools, we had, over the summer at the beginning of the school year, trainings on implicit biases. And it sounds great, and they use Michael Jordan and his, you know, theories on life to promote this, and, you know, everybody needs to be a winner and all this stuff.
Yes.
And it sounds great, but what you're doing is
Marxism.
You're creating a situation where you're teaching kids hate. You're telling them, you're teaching them not to, but you're putting these ideas that never would have been in their head in the first place in their head. And there was a 12-year-old boy, 13-year-old boy. He was like a freshman, sophomore in high school. I guess 14. He was speaking to a school board, and the video went viral. And I'd love to find it. I'll find it. I'll put it in your comments. But the video went viral, and he was speaking to a school board, and he said, I never knew what racism was until I was taught it at school. My friends and I never had an issue with racism. We had gone to school from preschool on, and we were all close until we started being taught that because I am a white Christian male, I am a racist. And then my friends who were not started looking at me like, hey, is he thinking this about me? Because the teachers in the school says that because he's white, he's thinking I'm less than him. And he said it created this issue where the kids are now looking at each other and thinking, you're thinking bad things about me because you're white and I'm not.
The same thing you just said, a lady told me about 10 years ago about the DARE program. She said, all this is doing is teaching the kids about drugs.
And we have multiple studies to prove that she was 1,000% right, because they have tried to study the DARE program to make it look good, and they cannot put lipstick on that pig.
That's right. You know, this is Nick Gardner, Poke the Hornet's Nest. I've got Leslie Sawyer and Katie Gorman here. We're going to have to do this again. This has been
absolutely
great.
Absolutely. And he wrote up here, one caller asked, when is Vance? J.D. Vance is going to the Reno Convention Center Tuesday.
Sparks Convention Center.
Reno Sparks Nevada Convention Center Tuesday.
This Tuesday.
So we're wrapping it up. Go ahead. Talk, girls. I knew a girl over at Parsons. She was a seventh grader, and some kid come walking up to her and her friends and started barking. And she says, why don't you just talk? And she got sent to the principal and was disciplined for bullying.
Mm-hmm. We have a student at, what school was that? It wasn't Rother, with the flags.
I don't know.
Parsons?
No.
Sequoia?
No. We have a school or a student that the parents came to us because they were wearing their American flags and they were bringing their American
flags. Oh, Grant.
Flags.
That was Grant at Grant, school. Yeah.
And they were told, you can't have these here. And then they were seeing teachers and they were seeing other students walking around with the pride pins and pride flags. And they were like, what? Okay, so I can't bring a Trump flag. I can't bring an American flag. An American flag. They had their State of Jefferson t-shirt or sweatshirt taken from them because it was inappropriate. Yet kids were walking around with a pride flag. So they brought their own pride flag to school. And nobody took their pride flag. So they were like, well, if you're not going to take it, we're going to destroy it. Because if ours aren't allowed at school, this one shouldn't be allowed at school. So they destroyed it.
What do you have to say about that, Alan Long, our new supervisor?
Right.
He was on the school board out there.
And they had a staff member that told them that they were going to try to charge them with a hate crime because they destroyed their own pride flag. Yet they weren't allowed to have an American flag. So, I mean, and the parents went and talked to the school and we didn't hear anything further. So I'm assuming the school backed down. But it's insanity what's happening out there. This right here, the American flag, is the flag of our entire country. Every person who lives in the greatest nation in the world should be proud of that flag. And every time I walk into a room wearing something American flag or holding my American flag cup and people are offended, those people need to pack their bags and get out. Because that is our country. That is the greatest country in the world. And if you can wear a Raiders hat and be proud, why can't you wear an American flag and be proud?
I've brought this to the attention of the audience of a couple people at the supervisors' meetings. One's the editor of the Shasta Scout. The other one is Christian Gardner. He gets down on his knees when it's the Pledge of Allegiance. Annalisa Pierce, she just stands there like a penguin with her hands to her side and doesn't say anything. These people, in my opinion, ought to have the respect to stay out of the room until it's over, not sit there and rub it in our face. And there's another one that sits there, or a couple of them that sit there, won't stand for the prayer, won't say the Pledge of Allegiance. I wonder why they're ashamed of our country. It's disgusting to me.
It's being taught in schools, and we need to stop it. Right now in Shasta County, we have a proud socialists on one of our school boards. We have to step up, and it's going to mean getting out of our comfortable armchairs at home. Leslie and I are mama bears. We're raising children. We each have 3 children each. We're working hard. We're doing everything we can, and we need help. So here's my plug. I want everybody to think about somebody they know or maybe themselves to run for a school board. I want you, if you need help or would like assistance, we have resources through Moms for Liberty to help them to run. And then we also have a Facebook page. We're called We the Parents. We have a podcast. We try to keep up on all the things that are going on. There's so much we wanted to tell you today we didn't get to.
Tell us about your podcast.
Our podcast is on mountaintopmedia.com. You can support us there, and you can also find our archives there and also find us on Facebook and on Rumble, and we're called We the Parents.
And you're going to have to tell us how we go about signing up to run.
That's, yes.
I wouldn't have a clue.
So if you are interested in running for school board, you can either contact the ROV, the county clerk's office, and you can get the information. Mary Paul there is amazing. She'll get you all the information you need. Or you can contact one of us, and we'll put you in touch. If you are running as a school board member, whether you are Democrat, Republican, Independent, we don't care what your party is. If you are running and you care about the children of our county and parental rights and not being a rubber stamp for the government, we have all the resources and tools you will need. Moms for Liberty created a toolkit for candidates. If you come to us, you say, I'm interested, you want to run, we have that toolkit available. You go through an interview process with us that just asks, basically, are you for parental rights? We ask you a couple questions. And then if you are endorsed by Moms for Liberty, or even if you choose to move forward without the public endorsement of it, you are given the toolkit for free, everything you need, all the support. It teaches you how to campaign. It teaches you what you need to know about the Brown Act. It teaches you everything you need to know. But the other thing is, right now, with the Title IX lawsuit that's happening against Joe Biden and his administration by Moms for Liberty National, every member of Moms for Liberty that has children enrolled in schools, if you have a child enrolled in schools and you are a member of Moms for Liberty, your school is protected against the the implementation coming in 2025 of the new Title IX rewritten by the Biden administration, which allows boys in your girls' spaces and boys on your girls' sports. If you are a member of Moms for Liberty, which means you go to the Moms for Liberty website, you sign up for Moms for Liberty, that is momsforliberty.org, click on the map, find our county, join our organization, your child's school is protected against that.
So what it does, and so what it does is that when